Hola, so good afternoon, everyone, and people around the world listening by podcast, whatever time it is in your part of the world. Greetings to you all. This is a little bit of an unusual final session for this retreat because I am lying sick in bed. Some major purification is taking place right now, and I'm being very well tended to, so everything that can be done is being done. But I'm not really well enough to go to the meditation hall this afternoon. So now everybody's on an equal footing. That is, people living here in the Araluen for the retreat, everybody gets podcast. So I wanted to share with you just a short passage from later in the text. This is in the chapter on sealing with a dedication in A Spacious Path to Freedom, and the page number is 198. So the author Kamachame Rinpoche speaks quite extensively about the importance of practice and of dedicating merit. And he says here on the bottom of page 198, and I read, "These are the incalculable benefits in engaging in practice." So there, for several pages there was simply very strong encouragement to practice. And then he says, well, in terms of the outcome of the practice, he says the optimal case is to become a Buddha in one lifetime and with one body. That'd be good while you're still alive and in good health, I would add. Great transference rainbow body would be the optimal option. Or he says, or else to become a Buddha as a Dharmakaya at death. This would be in the, when you slip into the clear light of death, you actually become a Buddha there. When the outer breath ceases, it's actually after the outer breath ceases, after you've slipped into the substrate, after the dark near attainment, then there's a clear light of death. So that's a nice opportunity to achieve Buddhahood by way of the avenue or the door of the Dharmakaya. The middling class is to recall the meaning of the unified stages of generation and completion of one's present meditation. At the time when one's body and mind separate, resulting in becoming a Buddha in the intermediate state, the bardo, as a sambhogakaya, indivisible from one's personal deity. So this is when you slip into it's called the bardo of dhammata, or the bardo, the transitional phase of ultimate reality. And this is for people who are highly accomplished in state regeneration and completion, or on the Dzogchen path who are very accomplished in the direct crossing over. And this is where you witness the various peaceful and wrathful deities, you recognize them as your own awareness manifestations, and you may become enlightened by way of Sambhogakaya. So that would be very good if you're very accomplished. And there are said to be 21 ways to achieve the result of Buddhahood, corresponding to the specific faculties of individuals. So I always wait, okay, but now what about the lowest ones? I'm waiting for me. And then he gets to us. People like me. The very least of them is called resting in a Nimanakaya pure realm. And it is said that by making prayers to take birth in a Buddha realm or a pure land, you will be reborn there. In this regard, he cites one of the greatest yoginis in the entire history of Tibet, a great adept of Chö, an overall extraordinary Dakini enlightened being, named Machik Lapdun or Machik Lapkidumma. And so he quotes her, and I say this is quite definitive, and I shall read simply what she says. She says, apart from Sukhavati, which of course is the pure land of Amitabha, apart from Sukhavati, one cannot take birth in the supreme pure realms without having reached the eighth bodhisattva ground, or eighth bodhisattva bhumi. That's the highest ones. For the middling pure realms, one must have achieved at least the path of meditation, in other words, Yonarya bodhisattva, on which the subtle afflictive obscurations have been eliminated. Without that, one will not take birth there. For the five pristine abodes, such as Akanishta and Attakavati, one must have reached the path of seeing, still have to be an Arya Bodhisattva, on which the truth of ultimate reality is seen after having severed the root of self-grasping. Without that, one will not take birth there. However, without having reached the path of seeing, if one is without even the slightest infraction of one's samayas and vows and applies oneself to prayer and to virtue alone, it is possible to take birth in a small pure realm, such as Tushita, that's the pure realm of Maitreya. But it is difficult. Therefore, it is utterly hopeless for an individual with mental afflictions to take birth in a Buddha realm. So there's bad news and there's good news. That was the bad news. There's good news coming, otherwise wouldn't have dropped this big downer on you. And then she says, however, it's this marvelous however, which is worth its weight in diamonds. However, the Buddha Amitabha himself has promised that one may take birth in his pure realm due to the power of his prayers. Thus, says Machi Lapke Domai, thus you should strive with your body, speech, and mind in prayer to be born in the realm of Sukhavati, ridding yourself of doubt, uncertainty, and spiritual sloth. With great and swift certainty and enthusiasm, bring to mind the splendor and benefits of the realm of Sukhavati and pray. Sukhavati is superior to the realms of the other Buddhas in these ways. It is greater because it is possible for ordinary individuals with mental afflictions to be born there. And if you take birth there, all that you wish for is accomplished as soon as you think of it. You're not tainted by even subtle mental afflictions, and you may go from there to the realms of other Buddhas. Thus, it is superior. Sukhavati is endowed with inconceivable benefits, including the swifter attainment of Buddhahood there than in other pure realms. There is no other pure realm within closer reach than Sukhavati, so it is extremely important to strive in prayer to be reborn there. So that's what she has to say. And Kamashama Rinpoche points out this is not simply her opinion or some anomalous view, but in fact there's tremendous support by these statements. And he writes here on the bottom of page 200, thus the splendor of Sukhavati Sutra, the Great Mound of Jewels Sutra, the splendor of Amitabha Sutra, the Holy Dharma of the White Lotus Sutra, the spell of the sound of the drum and the teachings of Orgyen Rinpoche, and that is Padmasambhava. All of these are all in agreement that unless you've committed any of the five acts of immediate retribution, like killing your mother, father, malevolently drawing the blood of a Buddha, killing an arhat, or creating a schism in the Sangha, if you haven't done that or abandoned the Dharma, Kamachama Rinpoche says, if you single-pointedly pray to be reborn in that pure realm, you can take birth in the realm of Sukhavati. Moreover, it is said that you will be born there after earnestly praying 10 times. That is due to the power of prayer of Buddha Amitabha, so it is crucial to make prayers for that pure realm. So dedication is like the reins that direct the steed of prayer. Dedication entirely accomplishes your own ends and the ends of others. And so there's where I'd like to leave it for this text. I wasn't introduced to these teachings until I'd already been studying and practicing pretty much full-time for 20 years. It was Gyatri Rinpoche who really presented this in a way that went into my heart and mind. And so I take these teachings utterly literally. It is almost inconceivably too good to be true. But if you accept it, if you can accept it, then it is a freely offered gift. If you don't worry. Just continue practicing. Dedicate your merit to having a fortunate human rebirth. But if you can accept this, this is a choice you can make. So I invite you to go from here to the practice of the sadhana of Avalokiteshvara, which will be played for you. You can practice this together. And when you finish that, then I'd like to share just one brief citation phrase of the sequel to this text called Naked Awareness by Karma Cheme. But before going there, I'll just add that for those of you who'd like to learn a little bit more about Sukhavati, that was, after all, a very brief introduction, then Kamachame Rinpoche himself wrote a fairly extensive commentary on it and how to really prepare oneself for such a sublime rebirth. And this is going to be available for everybody in terms of the supplementary readings. So, now I invite you to practice.
Having settled your body, speech, and mind in the natural state, take refuge and arouse bodhicitta. As Kamachamir writes, bring forth the aspiration for supreme enlightenment. Then withdraw all conceptual designations of objects out there and subjects in here. As you rest your awareness in its natural state, still, inactive, not conceptually designating, but simply being aware of the mere appearances arising to the six sense doors, all of them empty, none of them existing from their own side. And then if you already had very deep samadhi, you literally could withdraw your awareness from them. Withdraw your awareness into the substrate, into an empty field. Even without such deep samadhi, you can imagine it. Imagine all these appearances shimmering, shimmering, fading, fading, disappearing into empty space, vast, open, empty and luminous. And the Sanskrit is Om Svabhavishuddha Savadhamma, Svabhavishuddho Ham. Optimally, you'd be resting right now in Rigpa, non-dually aware of the Dhamma Dhatu. And out of this open space, imagine your consciousness as the white syllable Ri, rays of light are emitted, purifying the vices and obscurations of all sentient beings. This is your virtual reality. Do with it what you will. The outer universe is a palace and its inhabitants are deities. So by the power of imagination, you look upon your entire environment with pure vision, as if from the perspective of pristine awareness, your best approximation. The light rays are withdrawn and dissolve into the three. Upon a lotus sun and moon seat, the syllable Hri melts into light, which transforms into yourself as the great compassionate one. color of your body is white and you have one face. Like a blossoming lotus, you are smiling radiantly. The braids of your locks are bound up, adorned with a crown of five precious substances and a silken diadem. The first of your four hands are pressed together at your heart, the lower right holds a pearl rosary, and the lower left holds a lotus. You are beautifully adorned with a throat ornament, a collar band, neck band, necklace, and semi-necklace of various precious substances. You are luminous with no outer or inner obscurations. You are seated with both legs crossed. Various rays of light shine out. That is the nature of the Samayasattva. Upon a moon disc at your heart, the six syllables circle clockwise around a white syllable, hri, that is the Samadhisattva. By the power of verbally reciting Om Mani Padme Hum, all the sugatas of the three times become of the nature of the Great Compassionate One and dissolve into you like raindrops. That is the fully perfected Jnanasattva. The whole universe and all its inhabitants become the deity. Phenomena are the presentation of the divine body. All sounds and voices are the six syllables. Sounds are the presentation of the divine speech. The mind is the self-arisen union, and memories and thoughts are the presentation of the divine mind. So as we chant together the mantra, as we did before, imagine rays of light flowing forth from your heart, from the seed syllable and the surrounding six syllables in all directions, inviting, invoking the Buddhas of the three times. who converge in upon you in the form of Avalokiteshvara and dissolve into your body, speech, and mind indivisibly. As you view the surrounding environment and all those who inhabit it with pure vision, all forms as Namanakaya, all sounds as Sambhogakaya, and all thoughts and mental events as expressions, creative expressions of Dharmakaya. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 And now in this sacred space, with this sacred embodiment and this sacred identity, let's move to the practice of shamatha. And we have two ways to go. You may simply rest in this awareness, illuminated from within, of the surrounding environment, the lotus, moon, and sun disk, your own form. The moon at your heart, the central syllable Ri, the surrounding syllables Om Mani Padme Hum. Sustaining the sense of your own identity as Avalokiteshvara. And simply holding that, resting there, with a sense of ease, stillness, and clarity. There's one possibility. And there's a second one that's simpler. Narrow the focus of your attention to just the lotus and moon disc at your heart, in the center of which is just a pearl of light, a bindu, shimmering white in color. And hold just that in the space of your mind, with a sense of ease, stillness, and clarity. If you choose the latter option, when you begin the practice, you may have a sense as if you're looking down upon this moon disk and the bindu in the center, as if you're in a helicopter hovering above it. But as you relax more deeply into the practice, you may find that you can so relax, so release all grasping, that the locus of your awareness, the place of your awareness, the vantage point of your awareness, descends to your heart, descends to the orb of light at your heart, becomes that orb of light at your heart upon the moon disk, and rest there in this luminous embodiment of the clear light nature of your own mind. And let's continue practicing now in silence.
And now we pick up creating a kind of karmic connection or an auspicious connection with the retreat that will hopefully take place next year, in which teachings on naked awareness will figure very prominently. And so I read from the chapter of parables. These are the profound practical instructions of Avalokiteshvara. This is an introduction to parables in conjunction with their meanings for the purpose of identifying the ultimate reality of your own mind as the Dharmakaya. While giving the complete combined empowerments and teachings on all the secret, peaceful, and wrathful deities, Origen Rinpoche, Padmasambhava, taught the following parable. So here's Padmasambhava's, what I call the Dzogchen parable of the prodigal son. You'll see why. Thus spoke Padmasambhava. It is said that long ago in Gopotang Parde, in the land of India, in the center of the region of Origen, there was a structure built of precious substances with five doors and inexhaustible wealth, a palace wherein dwelled King Akashagarbha. With 84,000 districts, he ruled over many subjects. His queen was named Vimana Prabhini Manojnya, and his son, Prince Kirana, had not come into his strength and was foolish. His wise minister was named Surya Nashim. In short, he possessed a splendid entourage, realm, subjects, and wealth. Once near the king's palace, there was a great festival held in a marketplace, and Prince Kirana, together with his entourage, went to see the show. The prince went to watch the various spectacles displayed by an illusionist, and he was carried away by them. After getting separated from his companions, he became confused about the way back to the palace and lost his way. The prince wandered by foot in lands of people of more than one race and became a vagrant. He forgot his homeland and wandered from the gates of one city to another, eating beggar's food and wearing beggar's rags. Living in the company of foolish derelicts, he found nowhere to sleep but on doorsteps and experienced great misery. Many months and years went by, and the kingdom, having lost its princely heir, was on the verge of collapse, and there was fear that the royal line of King Akashagarbha had come to an end. At that time, the young beggar prince, in roving about among all the city-states, happened to arrive at the door of the wise minister, Surya Nashim. The minister, recognizing him as the prince, exclaimed, "Oh, our prince, who was previously lost, has returned. You need not beg. Come to the palace." And he began to lead him there. The beggar prince replied, "I'm no prince. When I search my memory, I recall being only a vagrant. You may bring me to the palace, but I'm not fit to be king, so I shall not go." The minister replied, "As a young foolish prince, not come into your strength, you went to watch an illusionist show in the marketplace. Getting caught up in the spectacle, you left the domain of the palace and went wandering. Now, even though you live as a vagabond, you are indeed the prince. So you will be given the seat of royalty. If you persist in your doubts about being the prince, I ask you, what was your original homeland? What was your palace? What was the city? What was the home? What was your class? Who was your father? Who was your mother? Who are your companions? What was your occupation?" The beggar found he had nothing to say, and he was stunned. "Well then," he requested, "tell me in detail about all these things and grant them to me." The minister gave names to the realities and pointed out his homeland, and he likewise told the prince everything about his district, palace, city, home, sleeping quarters, family, and parents. The wise Brahman then bathed the prince, took him outside, and placed him on the throne and established him in the palace. There he was crowned, with a diadem placed upon his head and clothed in royal garb. All at once, he was offered the wealth of his domain. A coronation ceremony was held, and he was given the kingdom and the royal palace. He became like his father. In an instant, even though he did not discard his identity as a beggar, he no longer lived in the manner of a beggar. The misery of being a vagrant disappeared by itself, and the kingdom and all his subjects without exception came under his rule, and they lived in great joy and happiness. So if you're looking for an explanation for this parable, the meaning of this, you have two choices, and I invite you to choose both of them. And one is, meditate on it and see what comes up. Think about all the teachings you've received. Think about the teachings on the Vipassana investigation of the origins, location, and destination. Think about all the pointing out instructions. And then I invite you to also to choose the second choice, and that is Padmasambhava himself gives an explanation of the symbolism of this parable. And so this I offer to you. I wish you well and pray that you all soon come to recognize who you are. Wishing you all well. Goodbye for now.